You're listening to Living Lab on the Point. I'm Heather Goldstone. I'm talking this hour with poet Len Germanara and Dr. Sarah Oktay, both of the Nantucket Field Station. We're talking about science and poetry. Len, you have put together a number of books that we have sitting on the table here in front of us that you've put together with students of various ages. And you're just mentioning that part of the process is actually that you make the books by hand.
Yes.
What does that add to the process, do you think?
Well, one of the things that I really appreciate about poetry and, you know, going back to my earliest days and experiencing poetry, it was always about community. And sitting in a confined area or in a comfortable area with a cup of coffee, maybe. I started in coffee houses back in the 70s. I mean, that's where I came to know and love poetry, really. And the idea of sitting down and folding the paper and then gluing the books together and all of that, you know, even the layout, it's all a democratic process. Whenever I put together a book, we talk, whoever's going to be in the book, about where they're going to be placed in the book and what the font's going to look like, all of that. So it becomes a community building kind of thing. There are 12 people in my writers group, and I'm part of the writers group. It's not my writers group, but we all contribute equally, and we get together for other things other than the poetry that we do because we like each other. And so that's a really cool thing to be able to have that as part of it's not a gang, it's a club kind of a thing, you know.
Now, I wonder if you could read us one of your own poems. We heard one of the student poems included in the anthology Veil of Particulates. So I wonder if you could read us one of your own poems.
Absolutely. I, as you were mentioning, I work with grade school students, and it's one of my great joys is to work with somebody who has new eyes. And I think it was George Carlin that said that, you know, they have new eyes. And this poem is called This Warm Day in October, and it's about a day I spent with my good friend Raymond. And I know Raymond will be listening to this at some point or another, so Raymond, what's up? This Warm Day in October. There are woolly bears and paper wasps everywhere, yellow legs and tree swallows murmuring. So many blue heron in one place, I'm compelled to point them out. I'll write it. A kayak trip through the marsh, hunting the best photographic subjects. The expensive camera. My expensive camera in a 10-year-old's hands. What was I thinking? The red knot in my throat wants to know. It all works out. He takes a few shots anyone would be proud of, and we talk about the things we like, that which we don't. What we'll do next time we see woolly bears and paper wasps everywhere.
I love the fact that in that poem you're talking as much about the process of the walk as what you actually saw on the walk, and we tend to think, you know, I went for a walk and I saw the woolly bears and I saw the caterpillars, but that's almost a meditation, a level above that.
One of the things that I try to convey to my students is that it all starts with opening your mind. You know, to take a mindful walk and then to write about it is where you're going to get the proper slant for your eco-poetics or your poetics in general. Just to be able to allow yourself to do that free association. Oh, that smells like grandma. Or, oh, that smells like my dad's 67 Plymouth, you know, when I was a kid or something like that. And that's where you can start introducing that metaphor and the analogy and, you know, drop and make it more inclusive so that it's not just a straight up listing of things. And too many times I think some of the science that I've read and some of the poetry that I read, you know, it's just a listing. You know, you get caught up in the sound of the names. I mean, names can be quite trance-like and trance-inducing. And so you end up just doing one whole list of really cool-sounding names, but you don't have anything else besides that. And so being able to take that walk or to expand on that experience and to draw analogy or to bring metaphor in is going to make it more inclusive.
So what is your process when you actually are planning to write a poem? Or do you even plan to write a poem? Do you set out to go for a walk and write a poem about that walk?
There was a time when that was part of the process, but now it's just sort of an organic thing that I just, you know, I've always got a notebook with me. Whenever something strikes me, the technological age that we work in now, You can just pull out your smartphone and record the thoughts as they come to you. But I don't necessarily sit down to write a poem. I sit down to write every day when I first wake up and try to recapture the dreams that I might have had or any of the imagery that I have. But I really let it come to me whenever it decides to knock on my door. I allow it to come in.
Now, Sarah, you said you sometimes edit or fact check Len's poems. Have you also started writing your own poetry?
I have. I've written about 3 or 4 pieces, not as many as I should. And this is reminding me that writing every day is really an important part of it. So I have started to write just as a way to kind of organize my thoughts and to be more mindful about what I'm seeing and to learn how to express myself in different ways, in ways that are maybe more meaningful. So I've written a few poems. I don't really think my poems are all that great, though other people seem to like them. I do a lot of geology poems and things that are based on science, and so it's something that helps me think through the process and figure out how I can describe geological facts, oceanographic facts, in a way that's maybe more fun or more something that's going to help you hold on and retain the information.
Now, Len, you said that there was an exercise that you could perhaps walk
Yes.
us through here in the studio, and perhaps
mm-hmm.
Those of you listening at home, grab a pencil and paper, and if you're game and adventuresome, perhaps you could actually post the results on our Facebook page, facebook.com/livinglabradio. Give us a sense of what you do with some of your students and what kind of exercises you might ask them to do to get started on actually writing a poetry.
This is something I've learned from Greg Orr, and I don't think it can be said enough. You need to give yourself permission to write. And Greg has a series of books that he likes to allude to by Joe Brainard. And Joe Brainard worked on the very simple premise that in allowing yourself to write, you start with, I remember. So those of you at home, take out your piece of paper and let's start with 10. So 1 through 10. And you're going to write 10 lines. And each line will start out with, I remember. Now, I'm going to tell you that generally this writing prompt, the one thing that I would tell my students is that you don't need to share this with me. If you want to, you're certainly more than welcome to. And it may take you to a place where you end up writing about something extensively because it will jar. As you get down that list of I remembers, it will jar something that you haven't thought of in, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, however old you are. You might, you know, it might be something from your childhood. It's like, oh my God, I remember that. And so the I remember exercise gives you that permission to write. Greg always says in his classes, I'm not going to want to look at these unless you want me to. I'm not going to ask you to show them to me, but I'm going to ask you to be very open with yourself and just allow that to happen. So all of you, from 1 to 10, and write each sentence. And it's very important that you write, I remember, also.
At the beginning of each of the 10 sentences.
Yes, and don't abbreviate it. Don't write it all the way out. Give yourself that permission to write all of it. And then just see where that goes. Greg generally will tell you to do that with 50. It's a good way to start. And a writer, if this was a writer's group, I'd say start with 50 I remembers.
But 50 I remembers. And that for one poem or just to...
It's not even necessarily a poem. It's opening up the floodgate to allow yourself to write. Because so many people get stuck right at the beginning to putting that piece of paper and that pencil together. Well, what am I going to write about? Why am I going to write about? Well, just relax and write, I remember. And then what do you remember? And write that down and go from that. And you will, at some point or another, find something that you want to write about more. And that will be the sort of the knock on the door. This is the poem. Hello. Write it.
Now, I only got as far here as we're sitting here as writing, I remember, and kind of my 1 through 10. And immediately encountered exactly what you were mentioning earlier about wanting rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because my first thought was, well, I remember this morning or last night, and are we talking about only science-related things that I remember, or are we talking about everything that I remember? And before you can even get to writing down a remembrance, your brain is putting up all sorts of barriers and rules, and the first thing you have to remember is there are no rules.
Yes. The answer is yes. Always yes. It goes back to my days as a concierge. But yes, the answer is yes. Whatever you want to do, you will find, in allowing yourself to write, you will find the answer. Then you will find the reason for writing and the reason for going on or for stopping.
Is that different when you perhaps have students like environmental studies students who maybe it's only their rule that you want or that they want to be writing about environmental issues, to be writing about science? Does that change the nature of that exercise at all to kind of put that limitation on it?
No, and a real good example, one of the students who was really adverse to writing poetry, he didn't think there was a place for it in his world, and he went out onto a beach, and he heard the waves crashing. And that made him think about a motorcycle, and it made him think about his friend who had passed away in a motorcycle crash. And he came to me and he said, I wrote a poem, but you're going to be upset at me. And I said, well, why am I going to be upset at you? And he says, because it's not an environmental poem. And then he read the poem to me, and it broke my heart. And I said, well, where did the poem come from? And he said, well, I was standing on the beach. I said, it is an environmental poem. The sound brought you there. And that's really, I mean, we try to encapsulate or compartmentalize so many things, and I'm looking for the feeling. I'm looking, again, for all of those visceral things. I'm not looking because I'm not a scientist. I can't fact check things like that. But if I can feel what you're saying, if I can smell it, if I can taste it, that's important to me.
And so part of it is actually realizing, I mean, we do often have, I think, this sense that science is other. It's something else. It's numbers and it's abstract and it's separate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not us.
Right.
And that what you're saying is that this is perhaps a way to realize that it is all connected.
And a lot of times we think of science as empirical, you know, and a lot of times it's just theory, and theory just allows for so much. And so there's interpretation there and just a way to open up a conversation. And the conversation that Sarah and I began with, you know, here's some empirical data and here's really, it's not true. And having that conversation. And that's, I think, where that nexus is important, because if you can have a conversation and an intelligent, informed conversation, but also understand that you're going to try to incorporate some other things in there, you're going to have a greater understanding. You'll be able to sit across from somebody that you don't necessarily agree with on a scientific basis. You want an outcome that will help you to save your house or your water or whatever it is, and you'll have an idea that this might be the way to go about it. And somebody else will say, well, no, that's wrong. But if you can find a way to have that conversation in the middle instead of at the edges, where so much of the discourse seems to be these days, you're going to find a way to solve problems instead of just enumerating them and pointing them out.
Now, Sarah, the UMass Boston semester on Nantucket is environmental studies, not just science, and students are encouraged to be looking at policy issues, at social issues, at how this broader picture fits together, and of course what Len's talking about, how this feeds into, you know, political issues or our own personal choices that we make and the environmental impacts that they have. Do you think that poetry or this kind of exercise perhaps of drawing on the artistic and creative sides of ourselves is particularly useful when it comes to environmental science, or would this be just as applicable anywhere?
Well, it does work with almost everything, but the one thing that poetry, I think, does better than almost anything is be persuasive and to communicate something in fewer words. I notice in a lot of Len's poetry, and part of it is because I understand what he's writing about and I know where it's coming from, but a lot of times he says things with just three or four words that are 10 times more powerful than something I would say in a whole paragraph. And I think that is something for environmental policy and environmental law, environmental justice, all these things, as we make our way through the world and lots of us are dealing with cultural landscapes of our own making. I think that poetry really helps us think about what we're doing, where we need to concentrate our efforts, what we need to learn, how we need to communicate that. And poetry can be much more powerful. And I think that's for a lot of scientists, we need to get out of our own, you know, way, as I said before, and help communicate to people why science is important, why people need to understand this. And it helps us also understand ourselves and what we're looking at.
Now, there is a growing trend to use art in various forms to connect people to science, particularly, I think, environmental science. Often you'll have, say, a painting or a photograph or some sort of visual art that is accompanied by words that are scientifically correct explanations, perhaps, of what you might be seeing in that photograph. And as you're saying, sometimes what comes through in the poems is fewer words and the gist of things. Do you think that the poems need that accompanying explanation? Have you ever considered perhaps doing a book that would be a poem and then the scientific text that would go with that?
That's a great idea.
That's a great idea. One thing that I'm president-elect for the Organization of Biological Field Stations. So there's field stations all over the world, and we're starting to include paintings, poetry, and some of our conferences. And we're encouraging painters and poets and performance art at our field stations to draw people in and to help teach us how to use some words of beauty as scientists. So it's, you know, always people always think of scientists as communicating just to them, and we're looking for more two-way conversations, like Lynn was saying, and that's the beauty of art. If I talk to a sculptor or an artist, a painter, a poet, they teach me new ways of thinking of things, and I do think that there are some great ways to explain stuff. Most poetry doesn't necessarily need, if it's done well, a paragraph of explanation next to it.
Right.
And I can see Lenny going, nodding up and down and saying, yeah, if you have to put a paragraph, you have to explain what you're saying, then you aren't really using the words you think you want to use.
Yeah, you need to write more.
I'm talking with Len Germanara and Dr. Sarah Oktay about science and poetry. More after a short break.